sports provide meaning and purpose and significance to people, whether you're a fan or an athlete. So that's why I think they matter. It's why we, you know, for the last 2 weeks have been so obsessed with March Madness, because in this, you know, small amount of time, we can really become part of something better than ourselves. That's why I love sports. I'm a huge fan, but more than just because I like to follow teams, but because I feel myself part of something bigger than myself.
Welcome to Ballers with Babies. I'm Mark Willard. Today, we know so much about what athletes and sports personalities do, but not so much about who they are, what makes them tick. What's life like the moment the stadiums and TV cameras go dark? Most go home to their families. We want to know what that after-hours experience is like. Ballers with Babies explores their upbringing, their home life, how it's affected by their high-profile job, and how that high-profile job is affected by the home life. On Ballers with Babies, we talk to some of the most interesting names in sports and find out how they're even more interesting than we realized. And don't worry, diehard fan, we'll get to the important sports questions as well. This is your favorite people like you've never heard them before. I hope you enjoy. All right, let's get him in here on Ballers with Babies. Gautam Chopra, of course, you know him as a documentarian, often in the sports world. But I want to know, Gautam, how sports became a passion. You know, your dad is like the guru in the meditation space, which to me doesn't always seem like or feel like a big sports fan space. So how do those two things blend?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan and really thrilled to be here. You know, I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. My parents were both immigrants, and I think like a lot of immigrant families, you know, my assimilation to America was through sports. And in a place like Boston, I mean, the Red Sox, the Patriots, the Bruins, the Celtics, like it's more than sports. It's part of the cultural fabric. So I grew up part of that. And then I'd say, you know, ironically, actually, you know, as my father sort of started to gain notoriety, probably while I was a teenager, for all the stuff he does in the meditation and spiritual space, you know, I used to tell him that, you know, everything you talk about in wisdom traditions and religious traditions, it exists in sports. Like, so that was the time, right, the old Boston Garden. I used to go to games and watch the Big Three play, and I was like, you know, that's a pilgrimage. That is a cathedral. There's a mythology to the Celtics. You know, you go to Fenway Park. I mean, we still call Fenway, you know, it's like this mecca. It's this sacred site. And up until 2004, it was a cursed, you know, sort of franchise. So again, like everything we associate with religion actually exists in sports. So for me, like all the stuff I do now, like working, whether, you know, and I joke with Kobe, the Antichrist, you know, for me as a Boston fan, or Tom Brady, you know, the demigod, you know, like it's like my world's converging, you know, the world I grew up with my dad, but also my obsession with sports. So, yeah, I mean, on the face of it, I can see how it's not, you know, they're not necessarily synergistic, but for me, they're kind of synonymous.
I wonder, how did those conversations go with him? I mean, I don't imagine the two of you ever, you know, sat on a couch and yelled at the TV together, or did you?
No, I mean, to this day, my dad, like, he, you know, it's a lively debate, I should say. He is the furthest thing from a sports fan. He doesn't get it. He doesn't care for it. You know, I have a funny anecdote. When I did work with Kobe, you know, and Kobe, you know, towards the end, like, he was going through so much with his injuries and everything like that. And he asked me, you know, he had learned how to meditate, I think, many, many years ago with Phil, obviously. But he had, like most people, kind of his practice had stopped. So he said, hey, I'm thinking about, like, learning again and maybe getting a refresher. Could you introduce me to your dad? So I did. And on the way there, I kept on telling my dad, I was texting him, I'm like, hey, listen, so I know you know nothing about sports. You don't need to, you know, pretend like, you know anything about Kobe. And he said, yeah, don't worry about it. And of course, the first thing we walked in to his office, he said, hey, Kobe, it's so nice to meet you. I've heard so much about you. You know, I know you've won 5 Super Bowls. And, you know, and Kobe loved it, of course. But, you know, like that's pretty much my dad's sports knowledge.
Oh, that's hysterical. By the way, was there ever any pause as a Celtics fan to work with Kobe Bryant? When those two things converged. Was there anything difficult in your mind about, you know, wrapping your head around that?
No, not, I mean, well, one, I mean, yes, diehard Celtics fan, but two, you know, big, I'd say even bigger basketball fan. So one, you know, while I've kind of rooted against Kobe from afar, I was a great admirer of his, just in terms of everything he had accomplished. What an amazing player. And even like literally from the first time we met, because Kobe and I are probably around the same age, you know, we met at like a charity function and I was sitting next to him. And so I kind of gave him my background about, you know, the growing up Celtics fan and like literally trash talk from day one. Like, you know, of course, it's what gets Kobe off is that combativeness. And so, you know, he was great. And, you know, again, another anecdote, like I met with him, we talked at that dinner, and then like literally a week later, he called me out of the blue and he was like, hey, so, you know, you should come down to Newport and I want to show you something. So of course I went down and he brought out these old VHS tapes that, you know, he had, his uncle had recorded when Kobe was a kid in Italy, and they were tapes of the Celtics Lakers. And he was like, let me show you why Larry Bird was the greatest pump faker of all times. And, you know, we just like watched tape. And as a basketball fan, you know, to sit down with Kobe, who not only a great player, but like a basketball savant, you know, and it was just like unbelievable. So yeah, there was never any hesitation to be able to work with somebody. And there was never a day that went by that there wasn't some form of trash talk, which I always found kind of crazy, considering like he had a legitimate reason to trash talk and I was just an obsessive fan.
That's outstanding. So, you know, we talk about your dad a little bit. You are a dad as well, correct? Now, do you have one son? Is that right?
Yes, I have one 10-year-old
son. 10-year-old. And what's his name?
His name is Christian. We call him Krishu. So, yeah.
Okay. And you know, I wonder about how some of all this now filters down to him, right? He's got a granddad who's a meditation guru. He's got a dad who is working with LeBron and Tom Brady and Kobe Bryant. And how does that all filter down to him? Like, what makes him tick with all this?
Yeah, he's a good kid. He's an only child, so he gets showered with love and attention constantly from his parents and his grandparents and everyone. So, you know, we've always been like my parents, never really pushed him into any one specific thing, but he's a huge sports fan, sports kid. He plays a lot of sports. The one I would say he's taken to the most is Taekwondo, which is not a sport that I ever really participated in, but like we just came back from a big tournament this weekend and he's super into it and competitive. But you know, and he's a big fan. Like he'll sit with me and watch March Madness, and you know, he's somehow, even though again I told him, hey, while you can't be a Lakers fan, you can't be an Angels fan, I'm okay with you being a Dodgers fan or a Clippers fan. But he's, you know, sort of like me, you know, he follows the Red Sox and the Patriots and the Celtics. So, you know, so far so good.
I have three little ones of my own. I'm well aware that everybody on many levels is changed by parenthood. And, you know, you're of course a storyteller. So I would think if you change, so does your work. How has being a father changed you and the work that you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like I think, you know, when I describe becoming a parent for me was a radical shift in perspective. You know, it's just like all of a sudden you see the world from a different point of view, and everything, you know, you do and everything you hear and everything you experience, you start to see it outside of yourself. For me, you see it through the eyes of, you know, your child. And so I think that for me has been very true for the last 10 years. And for my work, as much as I'm a sports fan, you know, for me, it's also when I try to now tell stories, it's got to be bigger than sports. It has to feel like, you know, it's not just about wins and losses or, you know, stats and data. It's about like, why do sports matter? And so, you know, I've tried to bring that from all these projects I work on, and even this now, the sort of new sports media company that I formed with Tom Brady and Michael Strahan, the big messaging and mission behind it and how we even filter the stories we tell is, you know, why do sports matter? Why do they drive and motivate, you know, whether it's an athlete or a fan, and how do they also bring people together? So despite our many, many differences, especially now, sports are, you know, for those three games, when I'm watching a football game or I'm watching a basketball game, I am one with the tribe, right? And so, you know, that's kind of like the mission behind everything we try to do.
You say especially now, which I take to mean this climate, you know, politically, socially. You're very active on social media with your thoughts about that and Donald Trump. How do you relay that to your son? How is that a subject in your home, if it is at all?
Yeah, no, it's a subject. You know, he's of the age now. One, he's like interacting with media himself all the time. And, you know, while we have some level of controls in the house in terms of like what he can and cannot, you know, watch and interact with, you know, he's out in the world. He's with his friends. He's riding around. He's with other people and other parents who, you know, express their points of view. So, look, it's a really tricky time because there's things going on. I have no problem, like, you know, talking to my son about politics and about issues and about things that are going on. But, you know, there's a level of debate, I guess, going on now, just like that is so undignified, frankly, in politics,
yep.
You know, in personal lives and scandals. And that's the part that's tricky because I'm like, you know, that is something I don't need. Like my kid asked me, like, wait, what's a porn star?
Right.
Like, you know, like, what
right.
are they talking about? That's the tricky part. But when it comes to issues, when it comes to gun violence in America, when it comes to the economy or trade or any of those things, I mean, we're, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, never dumb anything down. I try to do this in the content. It's one of the things, again, like working with Kobe. Kobe was always about, hey, we can never dumb anything down. We have to expect the audience to rise up. And I kind of expect that with my kid, you know, also like, hey, we're going to listen to NPR. We're going to listen to some of these podcasts and you're not going to understand everything. And then we're going to talk about it later. So, you know, that's what we do. But yes, there's also yesterday, like I was watching 60 Minutes, the Stormy Daniels interview, and
yeah.
He kind of came to say goodnight and I had to put that on pause.
Pause, yes.
You know, that's a level I'm not quite prepared to discuss with him.
I'm fascinated by what you just said, Kobe said to you. We're never, ever going to dumb it down. I feel like, and this is, maybe I'm asking this for selfish reasons, because when you're putting content together and you're a storyteller, it can be very challenging to do the content you want to do and have the intelligence quotient there, but then look around and see what's getting eyeballs and what's getting ratings, the Kardashians, the Ball family. And so how do you navigate that? How do you say, no, we want to keep it high and expect the audience to meet us, but then also have the faith you're going to get it out to a mass audience?
Yeah, well, I think the media landscape is changing a lot also. And one of the, you know, things we think a lot about from a story perspective, but even from a company perspective is, you know, we don't need to have the biggest audience. We're not looking for, you know, mass market sort of stuff. We're looking for deeper engagement. And if that means, you know, I have, you know, 500,000 people watching and caring and watching over again and trying to and asking questions and interacting and stuff like that, that's more valuable than 5 million people for whom it's just another thing in a long list of, you know, content that they vaguely pay attention to. And so, you know, I think that drives us and that's, you know, there's a business model for that because I think there is so much content. That even, you know, whether it's an ad-supported model or whatever, is like people appreciate that. Like that fan base that you've built, they're a real deeply engaged fan base as opposed to just, you know, passerbys. So yeah, that's, you know, for me and I, to be honest, like, so that's not even in the edit room. That's not what I'm thinking. It's like, you know, like tell a good story and, you know, if it's meaningful to the subject and you can communicate that, then hopefully it will be meaningful for the consumer.
Continuing with Gautam Chopra here on Ballers with Babies. So I read that you had a relationship with Michael Jackson, and the last time you spoke to him, you were talking about fatherhood. Is that true?
Yeah. You know, I was friends with Michael for many years, going back to when, you know, I was pretty young, and he was, you know, he also learned meditation from my father, you know, and so that's when I first met him. But, yeah, then I knew him all through, you know, for almost like 20 years, I would say. And the last, I think it was a couple of weeks before he passed away, he was, you know, at the Staples Center practicing for this big tour he was going to go on. And, you know, Michael is super conflicted. By that time, you know, there was a lot of different things going on just in his personal life, and he had kids. Obviously, you know, he had certain addictions and stuff like that. So it was really, you know, unfortunate. And, but he deeply, deeply cared for his children and, you know, thought a lot about like parenthood and how to be a good father. But, you know, by that time there were things going on in his life that were pretty uncontrollable. So I don't think anybody really, obviously what happened was horrifying and, shocking, but not surprising, I guess, you know, and if you've been around addicts and, you know, it's a lot of times they're great people, but just can't control these larger forces.
I also read that, I mean, there were times, especially with family stuff, he would call you for advice. I would be almost overwhelmed by that. I mean, is there a pressure that's associated with Michael Jackson asking for your opinion on things? Kobe Bryant asking for your opinion on things?
Yeah, I've been fortunate, obviously, through my own family, you know, my father and my mom, who's like, you know, she's sort of the quiet embodiment of all the things we talk, you know, my father gets credit for. So I've been, you know, I've had great mentors and amazing emotional well-being and emotional intelligence in my family. So I've never, I don't know, felt intimidated by that. And, you know, I'm always honest with my feedback and to whether it's Kobe or Michael or whomever asking. And, you know, it's, I don't consider myself by any means like a mentor to those guys. I mean, a lot of them, you know, I obviously Michael was older than me, but emotionally I would say, you know, Michael was stunted from 8 years on up, you know, just in terms of his life experience. And so, and a lot of things, you know, whether it's Michael or Tom or Kobe, et cetera, you know, we forget, like, right, there are these amazing, accomplished athletes who have achieved so much, but Tom just turned 40 last year. Kobe is around that same age, you know, and in some ways, because they've been so focused on being so great at this one thing in their life, they're underdeveloped on, or I wouldn't say underdeveloped, but unexposed to other things. But these guys are super curious. And so a lot of it's just, they just have questions and, you know, there's a trusting relationship there, and you end up, you spend so much time when you're working on these projects that you end up talking about a lot of things.
By the way, is there kind of a common thread between that kind of person, from a Michael to a Kobe to a Tom to a LeBron? Is there, what's that, you know, that common thread at that level of notoriety and greatness?
Well, I mean, there's just like a total devotion to craft. And, you know, I think that obviously there's something gifted, you know, whether it's athletically or artistically or creatively, that I think they're just born with, or that's part of their genetic coding. But I also think what I found, at least with those four in particular and others like them, is they don't take it for granted. They're the hardest workers. So, you know, perennially, Tom will be the guy who wins the off-season award. So not only is he, quote, the GOAT, but he's the guy who's showing up, you know, at practice before anyone else and leaving after everyone. Kobe's the guy who, you know, after a game is shooting around, or, you know, you hear those stories when, you know, he missed four, or he shot four air balls in the playoff game against Utah. That night, he's at Pali High shooting, you know, jump shots. And, you know, that's what drives these guys, like that need to be the best and be perfect, even if perfection is unattainable. And look, that sometimes has consequences and dark consequences, but they just can't help themselves. You know, it's just that what drives them. So I'd say that's the commonality.
Well, and all of them are dads as well. And I'm sure you've observed a lot of things, and this probably goes to you as well. When you're working on a project, you need to have total devotion to it, and it's going to take a lot of time. And so I wonder, you know, what kind of dads are these guys, you know, to be so beyond obsessed? How does one do a good job of that, and also being a present husband and father and all of those personal things in life?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything, look, all of these guys, in my experience, try their hardest to find that balance, but it's very difficult, you know, to be the best on the playing field or in the studio or whatever, and yet, you know, maintain family equilibrium. And, you know, it's a never ending, I mean, I go through it in my own life, like it's a never ending, you know, quest, and sometimes you get it right and sometimes you don't. With all of the guys I've worked with, I mean, Tom is like the most devoted father I can imagine. Like, and, you know, he kind of has a model in his parents. I mean, they're, you know, he has three sisters, and his parents to this day, you know, show up at pretty much every game. And so he's had that to model after, and he's a great dad. Kobe, you know, I think, who has a very different family background, but I mean, I've seen him with his daughters. He's unbelievable. He shows up at soccer practice. He shows up at, you know, ballet classes, all of that sort of stuff. You know, nobody really gets to see that, and it's hard in some ways to envision that. Yeah. But, yeah, he's an incredibly committed dad. You know, but I think it's a learning process for everyone. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of, we don't see the stuff where it falls out of balance. It's not easy. But I think, you know, so I'd say the consequence, the thing that's sort of the collateral damage is, like, you don't see these guys, at least in my experience, doing too much outside of, like, their work and their family.
Yeah.
So there's not much socializing. There's not much hanging out, you know, with the guys. There's not much just, you know, there's just no time. And I find that in my own life, you know, I'll go months, years without seeing my best friends.
How much do you consider intuition to be a part of what you do? And here's why I ask. You know, your dad being in the meditation, spiritual space, this is near and dear to my heart. My wife is in that same space, author, works as an intuitive. And I look at what you're doing, right? You had to have started working on Tom versus Time well before what ended up happening in New England this year. Obviously, we know he's coming down the stretch in his career, but his future, the relationship with Bill Belichick, et cetera, became the story of the year, and you were really ahead of the curve on that. Do you see some sort of intuition that blends into that whole story?
Yeah, I think it's intuition. I think it's also just like comfort with uncertainty. Like, you know, these are called unscripted documentaries for a reason, and you have to be comfortable with that, and you have to you know, make sure everyone around you is comfortable with that. The story changes, the story evolves and change and adapts. I think it's also just choosing wisely. I mean, it's easier, frankly, to work with some of these older athletes, or there's sort of implicit drama, right? That, you know, whether Tom plays five seasons or not, like, he's closer to the end than he is to the beginning. With Kobe, it was sort of the same way. So there's an implicit narrative arc to that. And then within that, sure, there's going to be nuances and variables. But I think it's just, it's being comfortable with that uncertainty and knowing, like, okay, we'll adapt. It's cool. Like, you know, we'll figure it out. And instilling that confidence in your subjects and the creative teams you put around you. And, but yeah, I mean, look, I need to get to know these guys. I need to spend time and, you know, write. Tom was the perfect storm. And one, I had a relationship, I was friends with him. Two, you know, I mean, we're the same age. I kind of knew a lot about the things outside of football that he was thinking about. And then three, like with the Patriots, you know, over the last two decades, you know, they're going to be in the mix. Like, right. You know, you don't know, you can't predict whether they'll win or lose a Super Bowl, but you know, they're going to be right there at the end, you know, and that's, again, implicit drama. It's not like you're just keeping your fingers crossed.
And you know, I know that you have some things maybe later in the year that are coming out around LeBron. How does that kind of compare to what you were just saying with regard to Kobe and Tom? Kobe was very much in those last couple of years, as we know, as you just said, so is Tom. LeBron, maybe not so much. Yes, second half of the career, but still right in the midst of it. So that's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, it's very different. The project itself is very different. You know, both Kobe and Tom were very much about following these guys and really taking a very intimate look at what's going on in their lives and how they're managing these last few years, et cetera. For LeBron, the project is very outward looking. It's, you know, about LeBron and his generation of players, because, you know, I think we can all agree he's probably the best of his generation and the leader. But he's also the leader off the court, both in terms of, like, you know, commercially, all the things he's doing, but also socially, how outspoken he's been, the stuff he's doing in Akron, in the school system, et cetera. So it's really more, I would say, a look at that and understanding why that's important to him and why that drives him and why that's sort of become a badge of honor for other players of this generation. So the Steph Currys, the Draymond Greens, even the Jaylen Browns, you know, and what's the genesis around that? The league itself has been a league where that has been at the forefront for generations, going back to, you know, Bill Russell and Spencer Haywood and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And this is, again, stuff that LeBron is acutely aware of. So not only has he looked to guys like, you know, Michael Jordan, of course, and Kobe Bryant as his mentors on the court, but he's very aware of these guys off the court. And I'd say that's kind of where the emphasis is.
All right, home stretch with Gautam Chopra. Let's stick to sports a little bit on the way out. I don't mean this necessarily to paint you into a corner, although maybe a little bit. I got to hear how you answer this question. Who's the greatest athlete you've ever worked with?
Oh, man, that is a tough one. You know, I would say I know Tom the best because I've known him for years, both on and off, and then I've worked off the field, but now worked with him, I guess, on the field or while he's been on the field. Kobe, you know, I got to know really well, and I still, you know, communicate with. LeBron, you know, I work with, but kind of from afar, don't know him nearly as well. So, you know, those would be the three. And I mean, look, it's impossible. It's like the holy trinity of modern athletes,
right.
You know, and all very different, you know, personalities. So I don't know. I can't answer that one, but what I would say is there's no one outside of those three that I would even put close to them.
Frankly. Yeah, that's fair. That's how I expected you to answer it. What I'll ask though, with those three guys, and we talked about the timing with Brady, and it'll probably be the same with LeBron. The free agency this summer is just going to be nuts as far as attention. I wonder if you see anyone right now around the corner, like who's next? If you could choose an athlete to work with in 2019 or 2020, right now in this landscape, who would that be?
Yeah, I think about this a lot, you know, like, oh God, where do I go next? Like in terms of, I think there's a lot of athletes and, you know, both actually Kobe and LeBron, you know, touch on this in a way is they're global, you know, they're because of the sports they play. I think they have a real global impact and that's fascinating to me, but I'd say, you know, the only ones bigger than them in that respect are soccer players. And so there's a, you know, handful, the Ronaldos and the Messi's and Neymar's and even David Beckham continues to be like this massive presence out there. And so I think those guys are interesting, you know, obviously just as a fan, you know, I'm like the Tiger Woods story is amazing and yep. He's fascinating. And I love what he's doing right now in terms of, you know, coming back and galvanizing the sport again. So, you know, I keep my eyes open. Serena, you know, she's, in my opinion, so that's actually now I have to like amend what I just said. Like, there's no athlete other than those three. I mean, Serena's definitely in that club. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot out there that I think is, and I would say, you know, we have this show called Religion of Sports on Audience Network. What I love about that show is actually it's the inverse of all of these things. It's really about fan communities and why sports matter in, you know, whether it's dirt track racing in the South or it's, you know, a small football rivalry between two clubs in Glasgow. It's like, why do these sports matter so much to fans and communities? And I love exploring that. And, you know, it's done in the absence of big, huge superstars. But the stories are just as rich, and sometimes you get even better access.
Well, why do you how do you answer that question? And yes, it may be different from market to market and sports to sport. But why do sports matter?
I mean, sports matter because I think, first of all, sports are mythic, and you know, sports are about human potential. You know, it's about achieving the best aspects of yourself. So if you're an athlete, it's, you know, really driving you to almost inhuman, extraordinary levels. I think also over time, you know, sports have been this looking glass. You know, again, this is like the NBA project I'm doing with LeBron, which is, you know, you can see through the genesis of the league and the genesis of certain athletes in the league, the evolution of social justice in this country. And so I think that's really interesting. But ultimately, you know, sports provide meaning and purpose and significance to people, whether you're a fan or an athlete. So that's why I think they matter. It's why we, you know, for the last 2 weeks have been so obsessed with March Madness, because in this, you know, small amount of time, we can really become part of something better than ourselves. That's why I love sports. I'm a huge fan, but more than just because I like to follow teams, but because I feel myself part of something bigger than myself.
Hey, Gautam Chopra, Ballers with Babies, thank you so much. That was really great, and great to catch up with you.
Thanks, man. I really enjoyed it.